Portfolio Committee and the Deputy Minister seated here with me, colleagues. We are going to talk about the SSSA second and third quarter report of 2019. I must admit, Chairperson, some of the stories we are going to talk about.
As you can know, I see the hand from Honorable Mr.
Yes, my appointed chair, which means I was not concentrating that you are going to start with SSA. Before he present, I would like to raise the issue that I did raise it with your good sir, chair, that I have seen the State Council media press statement that they have issued, which there's nothing unbecoming about it, but also just as we'll be meeting the council looking at the bill next week on the 4th, that we shape our program in such a way that it allows them so that we can deal with the long-standing issues that we thought that we should, as the committee, engage with them. Then later on, we deal with the bill, as it were. So I'm suggesting that, so that I'm just saying it upfront, so that also to say that we are at work in terms of paying attention to states as a texture, because we have never met them in the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The council statement is a public statement, but let me mention that council, or maybe the Statistics Act, makes provision for three players. One is the minister, who approves the work program of SSA and manages the performance of the statistician general. The second one is the statistician general, who is the chief executive officer and who implements the act and exercises independence in methodological independence at all times. The third institute in that regard is the State Council, which advises both the minister and the statistician general. And all these institutions can exercise independence from one another at any given moment in line with the State Act. And the details are outlined in the State Act. But getting straight to the presentation, we are going to talk about organizational performance, financial performance, human resources, quarter one and quarter three achievements, as well as strategic risks. What is the strategic agenda of SSSA? Driving legislative reform, maintaining the quality of core statistics, and modernizing and innovating the statistical value chain, transforming the organization and dealing with organizational reform, and indeed rolling out the integrated indicator framework and preparing for Census 2021. Let me mention, Chair, that even with the council statement that we have seen, SSA is in all times in business in all eternity. So we will do everything to keep this point number two, to maintain the quality of basic statistics. So any number that we make out there must still command the respect. If any number would not command the respect, we would not release it ourselves. Having said so, we are looking at the progress against annual targets in quarter two, and we are indicating that we were sitting there in relation to targets achieved by quarter two, sitting at 36%, and in terms of percentage spent, 45%. What causes this is because we run in project mode, and in project mode, there are times where there could be consumption of budgets coming out largely from utilization of vehicles and the like, when the percentage of the work that is done, we haven't closed the account on the work. So we only say field work is complete once we have come back from field and closed the account. And we will see it was also a similar nature in quarter one. But it does happen that sometimes you see us over closing an account on a particular project while the percentage spent is less, because percentage spent is based not only on commitments but only on expenditure. In quarter two, we achieved 96% of our target, and of course 4% were delayed, and the vacancy rate remained at 19.2. Women in SMS, staff with disability, remained at about the same point, about 41%, and about 1.5%. I need to say that staff with disability, it's not because we are increasing. We will remember that we've been moving out of 1.2%. It's because the base, the denominator is decreasing, and as such, their number remains the same. But otherwise, staff members that left, 24. We usually lose between 22 and 26 staff members per quarter, and payment within 30 days, as usual, it's 100%. On this one, we have a payment tracking system that we have shared with other, we are sharing the source code with other departments, and actually what we are doing now, we are sharing with municipalities. Now, let us look at quarter three. Quarter three, we had our percentage spent sitting at 71%, while our targets achieved were sitting at 65%, and 93% of the targets were achieved. Those were 112 to be exact, and indeed 7% were delayed, but our vacancy rate is increasing. It's now sitting at 20%, and we had 22 of staff members who left, and indeed payments remain on track. Now, if we look at the adjusted baseline allocation, we had a total of 2.514 billion as allocated, and of course on compensation of employees is 1.46 billion, and of course the others I can skip and only talk on goods and services, sitting at 681 million. So the point is there is always a balance, especially in the nature of state SSA, that in as much as we lament the issue of staffing, goods and services needs to be taken care of, because otherwise you can't have staff members who come and then they don't have work to do. They have to have work to do. They must be out there in the field, and we have a lot of work happening on a daily basis. Let us look again in terms of compensation of employees as projected for 2019-2020 in 62.5 million for the 2019-2020 based on the permanent field positions. And of course, this is what we are projecting as the over expenditure. We did, and there's always been a question. Why has TESSA been able to performing in the last financial year at 93% when you don't have money for compensation of employees? It's because National Treasury had given us 75 million rands once off, and that hasn't been repeated, to ensure that our field work is not affected. If we had not received this 75 million rands, we would have had to stop most of our field surveys, and that would have had dire consequences. On the census 2021, we had 145 million, and of course spend was 36.9% as of end of December 2019. But of course, as we are talking now, because most of our field work continued and is continuing, we are at the second phase of the mini test that we started in October. We are looking at institutions now. This is the actual spending in quarter two, the blue color in quarter two and quarter three, and certainly we can show by program our percentage spent, and of course I think the average is the one that we have already spoken about of the 45% right on the right hand side versus 71%. In terms of human resources, in quarter two we had 2,836 staff members. in quarter three, 2,813 staff members. If we look at these numbers, we have actually come down from above 3,000 staff members, and these are permanently filled positions, and every quarter as we report, the numbers are going down and down. And in terms of female, StatsSA has a lot more staff members that are female, but while there are more staff members that are female, they don't account for such when we come to SMS. We have about 54% of our staff complement being female, but when we go to SMS, they are actually 41. So there is an anomaly there. Chairperson, let me indicate that we can demonstrate in terms of different areas or programs where the staff members are sitting in terms of being in admin, economic statistics, methodology and standards, as well as population and social statistics. But as I've indicated, women in SMS are sitting at 41% versus about 59% of their male counterparts. And of course, my apologies, that is as of 30 September. As of 31st December, that hasn't changed. It's still the same. So, and unless you are hiring, you cannot make such a change. Now, let us look at the achievements against the strategic targets and expand the statistical information base. In quarter two, we had published 71 statistical releases, whereas in quarter three, we had 65 statistical releases. But one of the things that we did in quarter two is to conduct the field operating operations training for Census 2021 mini test, as well as data collection for the Census of Commercial Agriculture. And of course, we co-hosted the South African National Capital Account Forum. And furthermore, in quarter three, we conducted Census 2021 mini test in October 2019. The training occurred in quarter two, but the actual deployment in the field was in quarter three. And in quarter three, we concluded data collection for the Census of Commercial Agriculture. The Census of Commercial Agriculture is the one where we look at VAT paying farming units. And of course, in this regard, we are planning to release the results in March, that is next month this year. Now, in terms of Census 2021 key milestones, census work involves a lot of tests, mini tests, all the dress rehearsals and everything. But what we are focusing on is to tighten our systems so that when we finally deploy to field, we are sure we are solid. Now, in terms of trusted statistics, in quarter two, there were about 1 million visits visit sessions to our website. To be exact, 907,730. We track them down, and we also look at those that result in downloads. About a tenth of those, about 12% almost, 110 and 479 documents were downloaded from our website. In quarter three, of course, it was a short short quarter in terms of our festive seasons. We saw about half of those that were in quarter two in terms of visits to our website. And of course, but the downloads continued, about 85,547. And in terms of coverage, we track coverage of the use of statistics in the media. We can actually tell what is covered in the Business Day, in SABC, Cape Times, The Star. We had about 110 incidents of coverage in one quarter from the Business Day, and of course from the City Press at the top is 39, but we continue tracking them at all times. And we had the census publicity campaign in Soweto, and one of our surveys, we started with stakeholder consultations in the National Household Transport Survey. We manage and we track articles, how we are growing in terms of audience reach. We track how much we are growing or declining in every quarter, and those are the statistics showing. We look at our Twitter growth, our Twitter decline every quarter, Facebook. We watch those things, as well as in quarter three, we continue watching them. Partnership in statistics. One of the things that we did in quarter two was to present the South African the South African report on sustainable development indicators. The minister led the delegation of South Africa to present that, but generally the delegation was led by Minister Naledi Pandor, but our minister in the presidency led this initiative particularly to present. We worked with the Multidimensional Poverty Network Group on a side event to launch the SDG report in New York. We provided the South African statistical quality assessment framework for the Mpumalanga government, and of course, we hosted delegations coming out of Namibia and Somalia. And in quarter three, we launched a goal tracker facility that we are working with the government of we are working with the government of Sweden, and we are working with them not only as a government but also internationally, because they have experts that they have deployed. And we launched this goal tracker to be able to see and watch as we are giving more information on our goals, and civil society, not only for the goal tracker but also for the SDG report, have been very critical. In the past, we used to have two reports that we presented, one by government and one by civil society organizations. But what is happening now is that we have one report going to the UN, and we have gone to every civil society formation out there in the provinces and engaged them and said, let's talk, let's hear what your concerns are. We might not resolve them, but let's see to make sure that we have an inclusive report. We hosted delegations from Lesotho and Namibia again, and of course, we attended the 13th session of the Committee of Directors General. This is an African Union-led initiative, and I represent the country. And of course, at the next one, the 14th session, will be hosted by ourselves here in South Africa in November this year, on a date to be determined by the African Union. Capable organization, we invested in leadership, statistical leadership capability. We hosted the second public service women in management seminar, and of course, Women's Day celebrations, which we don't forget all the time in quarter two. And enhancing corporate governance, we made sure that we realign our structure in progress, and as we are doing so, we have finalized this matter, and in subsequent quarters we'll report that I have had discussions with the minister to sign it off and pass it on to the Minister of Public Service. And we continued with strategic engagements with staff in relation to the five-year strategy, which, by the way, we have finalized, and they have already agreed with council that they will recommend it to the minister, in as much as the statistician general recommends it to the minister. Now, in quarter three, we had a disability in Indaba, and we have we looked at the issues of employment equity reported to Department of Labor. And let me mention, on matters governance and run of the mill, we are quite unapologetic in the way we handle ourselves, because we are saying that every now and then we must report. And of course, in terms of corporate governance, we continued with the new strategic direction and established a staff placement committee, because this structure that we are talking about, that we have finalized, we need to place staff in components, especially components that will respond to our drying financial resources, and making sure that we remain core to the business and continue with strategic engagement on the five-year strategy. Chairperson, what is at risk? One is there continues to be demand for statistics nationally, continentally, globally, and sub-nationally, and even by key users. One of the issues that we might not see in the council statement that was released is because let's just say, other than having the council, as user focus groups in communities, because we must always refine our methods in relation to the work that we do, and in with the academia, with different establishment, the Economic Society of South Africa. So in those engagements, when users demand for data, and one, we say to them, sorry, we can't give you this statistics, or we keep on giving them the same statistics. One, a good example is the poverty number, which is up to 2015. In law, in statistics, is that you give the last number as officially published. So we keep on giving the same number and the same number. The users do get on a panic, and some of them do raise these issues, and in their own right do write in the media. And as we have seen recently, the Economic Society of South Africa did write about status, and those are matters that we have no control on. And in this regard, on the council statement that went out yesterday, it's because it's not just council on its own. Council represents different groupings and lobby groups in it, labor, economists, statisticians, academia, and everyone. And they have been lobbying in this regard. It's because the demand for statistics, official statistics, is increasing. And we will know that coming out of 1994, prior to 1994, potentially, not many people worried as to whether there was statistics or not. But beyond that, as statistics inform planning, monitoring, and evaluation, and as statistics are infused in daily debates as to whether the scarcity of water, lack of basic services, improvements in basic services, reticulation of water, housing, and the like, we should expect that these kinds of debates will lead to some sort of agitation. The fact that Status SA is facing severe budget shortages is not a secret, and we know that no matter how much we are doing, if we don't have money, you always cut your cloth, your dress according to your cloth. But otherwise, the IES, Income and Expenditure Survey and Living Conditions Survey remains partially funded. And of course, that has effects on the poverty estimates, the CPI baskets, the GDP estimates. The vacancy rate, as we have indicated, is sitting at 19.9%, 20% almost, and staff are overstretched. These are issues that are already in the public domain. But while basic statistics remains at risk in long term, I need to assure this House that any statistics that we make public, when the statistician general stands up and say, I'm making this public, we are solid. We would not make it chairperson and stand there if we were not solid. What we have discontinued largely is integrative statistical products. Those are products where we pull different reports, surveys from different sources of our surveys and write a narrative to assist the public to digest our figures. Those ones we are no longer able to do. So we will soon be seeing more of reports that just come out of our surveys. This is the number, and we leave it there. But otherwise, Chairperson, let me mention that the slide that tells Ndihela Kwala, meaning that I finish here, reminds us that status aid doesn't end here. It's only my presentation that ends here. The next slide is blank, Chairperson. I have colleagues seated at the back, at DDG Ashwell Jineka for our user outreach, and our head of strategy, Celia Ditlek, and acting DDG for corporate services, Bruce Yoste, and acting DDG for the South African National Statistics System, Yandi Swambeche. We have a lot of acting people in Stats SA, but at some stage it will end. If we ask difficult questions, they will answer. I'll take the simple ones, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. The floor is now open. Okay, and then it will be you. So, let us note you now down, because the list is so huge. I noted you first, and then. Muzipe, you are in. Marulenge. Malazi. Malobani. I don't want to make a mistake with anyone. Shoot, Mama.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And then also thanks to SG for that SA. I've got two questions to question. Is there any hope that vacancy rates would come down to baseline level of 10% given the budget challenges of Stats SA? The second question is, will the realignment process lead to job cuts and compacting available positions to achieve service delivery with less capacity, or include filling up vacancy at 19.9%? Thank you.
Malazi, there's an indication from Dr. Kraber that you have decided to swipe.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But before that, I think my colleague, Honorable Plan, had
okay. Honorable Plan?
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, you haven't seen us for a long time. You've forgotten our name. yes, Chairperson, you know, since I've joined this committee in the beginning of this term, we've discussed continuously that the Minister would deal with the situation Stats SA is in terms of funding. Now, I must tell you, I'm extremely concerned in the situation Stats SA is still remaining, because, I mean, you read the report that the council is threatening to resign. And I must agree, I mean, the alarming situation in the country is that billions of rands have been plundered from state coffers in terms of, and we see that on the Zondo Commission, but no arrests have been made, but there's no concrete effort made to actually ensure that Stats SA has the funding to do their job, which is probably one of the most important jobs in this country. And I'm just wondering, you know, also whether government is actually doing this on purpose so that we don't actually get the correct outcomes of Stats SA and what's actually the, you know, what is actually happening in our country in terms of stats. Now, I mean, and I also want to know that, you know, once we've done our census, do we have a enough operational capacity in order to analyze those stats? Because, I mean, that is a critical part of the census. And I really, and the minister's not here, but the deputy minister's here, and I would really appeal to the minister and the deputy minister to assist this department, because it is critical that we deal with this issue at the moment, and that we, that this department actually does what is expected of them, because in every aspect in this country relies on proper stats in order to be functional. So really, I mean, it's critical. The minister has to tell us what is going to happen and when he's going to assist in terms of this funding. We fund all frivolous kinds of stuff, but we don't concentrate on the real issues, and this is a real issue, Chair.
Maluleke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I would also want to commend the Stats SA for their achievement of 96% on their targets. Really, this is a good thing. And I just hope they keep up the good work. But Chairperson, on the issue of their staff, I just want to find out from StatsSA whether the people with disability, they've got 1.5%. I don't think it's a good one, but they can improve. But I just want to find out, are they also represented as senior management team? And what percentage are they there? And also this thing of staff exiting this department, what is it that they are doing to make sure that they retain their staff members? Thank you, Chair.
Malati Zoshenna.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for that presentation. I've got very brief questions. Two, I just want to establish from the executive authority as to whether they've engaged with the Statistics Council and what those efforts have been, particularly in the lead up to the communication that went out outside, because in my view, that is an extraordinary development. And I think what it points out to is the level of desperation around the growing situation with the funding, the existing funding model for Stats SA. But further to that, to establish from the Deputy Minister as to, have there been any engagements with the Treasury about the funding concerns that are now historical? I mean, these are not coming up for the first time here. And lastly, to the Statistician General. So I just want to establish in terms of the sequence of events, if there were any leading up to this communication, whether the Statistics Council again had been in discussion with you, and ultimately whether, in your view, you think that the approach taken with that communication, which, as we all know, and everybody in this room would attest to that, has caused a lot of agitation and panic outside, was the right approach to deal with such an issue. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Sable.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. just in connection with, obviously, the funding issue, which is the main one, I'd like to request that this committee considers using that new tracking tool which the team has created. Why don't we get the Minister of Finance here to come and account? Because this is something that we've been speaking about for more than a year now, and at the end of the day, we can get the Honourable Minister Mtembu here, but ultimately it is the Finance Minister who makes this decision. So we need to understand why there has been so little movement. So that would be my first submission, Chair. And then I'd also just like to find out, I mean, I hope that Stats SA understands that this committee is essentially, I hope I speak for the whole committee when I say unanimous, in our support for resolving this funding issue. But then I have to ask the question, who pays for all the people that came here today? Now, maybe some of them will be answering critical questions, but listing 5, 6, 7 people who would have traveled and come down here on taxpayer expense doesn't seem to be consistent with the appeal that is being made for more funding. So I'd just like to get some more clarity on that as well. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Malomane.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is based on page 14 and 15 under Human Resource Information, GODA 2 and GODA 3, gender representative. It shows that in the second GODA, women in SMS level, it was 41.3%, and then the male, it's 58.7%. But it seems as if women is dropping down in the third GODA. It's 41.2, and the 2%, it shows that it only the employment went to male. So can you please, as a woman, I'm speaking as a woman, so that maybe please, can we try as a department or as SSA so that 50-50 in the SMS, can we try on that one? If maybe as women we need empowerment, so can the department do that so that we can reach the 50% representatives in SMS? The other question that I want to put is that under the publicity campaign, that are there any service delivery issues that are raised in your instance SA, and how do you redirect them to the correct department? Thank you.
Honorable Song.
No, thank you, Chair. Probably just to build on the point that was raised by Honorable Shanks first, Doctor, is that we have raised this issue. Even the point that he's raising in terms of also engaging with the minister, we even said that we must engage and have a decision with the appropriation committee and the finance committee at a first instance. And I'm saying in terms of relation, I'm raising that in relation to the tracking system. Probably some of us, I'll volunteer myself to put the date in between the compliance dates of the portfolio committee. Because that's why we're losing the whole thing, because we can't repeat ourselves all the time. And we're not adding value, because I'll agree with members that we're not agreeing in a way, but double-sided in terms of agreeing and not agreeing that. As Parliament, we are doing something. The last 10 committees did the same thing, even our first year. We, in our BRR engagement, and also when we're dealing with the budget votes also, we made a recommendation. So we do have a standing to say how do we move forward in terms of engaging the two committees that have suggested, and which of course, those committees will be also led by their ministers that account to their portfolio committees. That's one, Chair. Chair, the other one, probably it's more of a political one, which I will not necessarily engage on. I'll just go past that. The Zondo Commission, this government is committed to deal with corruption. But there are processes. Probably if we are interested of what has happened, let's say these are the areas that issues, allegations that have made in the Zondo Commission, that this committee does have an interest in terms of playing its oversight on what has happened, and the relevant law agencies, then they can come and make presentation, and what then takes time for these cases to be concluded. Probably, I think if we put it that way, then we'll be doing our oversight than just rushing a political statement. But I know that is made by frustration, which were equally frustrated, but probably I want to locate it in that space. That's two, Chair. The other one, Chair, which relates to the tracking system as well, in engaging the council, because the FD has spoken in terms of separation of roles and responsibility. But I'll go back to the point that I made earlier on before SA made their presentation, Chair. That in our next engagement with the bill, the first session must deal with us engaging with the SA, with the State Council. Because also, that's why I was saying that their press statement is, there's nothing untoward on that one. Because we should have engaged them, because it's not their business also to look and read the documents of government. They might not be aware that we have been robustly and also so angrily raised the issue of funding of this estate. And the rationale that was also informing us of this committee was not to say that we're the spokesperson of the departments and entities in terms of funding, but is to say we shouldn't internationally and domestically compromise the work and the output and the product that comes from that entity. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. My apology for coming a bit late. We had a problem with the traffic. There were some accidents
N1. Chair, I wanted to check something. Firstly, commending that SA to have that disability endeavor, because disabled people are always left behind. But I wanted to check what were the key outcomes from that endeavor. Chair, I wanted to echo the words of the previous speaker on funding, to say we welcome the work of SASA, but it's clear that the budget is hindering them here and there. Now, I'm afraid, Chairperson, because even the council, in its statement, it was stating that because the work of SASA is somehow jeopardized, they are not going to support them with not trusting due to the way they are doing their work. It's clear that they are struggling. But to echo Malisoma's words, to say it's been a while. Mina, the writer that I have, Malisoma, is that I don't know whether we will be overlapping, but to communicate with the finance committee, portfolio committee is overdue. We rather have the minister himself maybe to come to this committee, because the committee feels strongly that the work of SASA is very important, and they need to work within the conducive environment. Thank you.
Honorable Gibbon.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also apologize for being late. I had the same problems as Woman Dole. Chair, one cannot overemphasize the importance of SASA. I really also join my colleagues on the importance of them getting the funding. But my question, Honorable Chair, is on census of commercial agriculture. Concerning census of commercial agriculture, is there any reluctance from the commercial farming community for fear of information to be used to disadvantage them during the Section 25 constitutional process? If so, how do you allay these fears? Also, on community mobilization and advocacy, does the department, through its field work, get to experience violent communities or those who would not want to cooperate, even as they may not be hostile? What do you do in this regard? I think.
Honorable Tawekul.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may ask for a simple answer from the CEO. He has been mentioning the challenge of budget cuts in the department, the challenge of staff that's exiting the department. What is actually the real reason for the staff to exit? Is it because of the low wages, because of unbearable, comparable work that they are doing in the department, or maybe they are forced to leave just because of looking for current pastures? On commercial agriculture, Chairperson, I want just to ask one question. You know, it's very worrying that a lot of farms have become fallow. As a result, a lot of employees who have been working in farms have lost their jobs. At the same time, losing an income to support their families. The CEO said they have field workers. Besides, maybe trying to extract the information from the farmers, the field workers would have maybe been able to go to different areas and to extract exactly the number of people that have lost the job opportunities in the field of commercial farming. What is it that prohibits or hinders the department or state to bring that information forward, as we've been seeing the information regarding the retrenchments in mines? Thank you, Chair.
A response is SG. Oh, before that, there's Honorable Mutsipe who wants to. Honorable Mutsipe.
Thank you, Chair. Just to ask this question before SG can answer. I would like to ask that the conducted census was done, conducted census for 2021, mini tests was done in 2019. And then now we are in 2020, and then we are looking for 2021. So this test will be done until the 2021, or there will be another follow-up that will be made in order to face the 2021, and then are you sure that every logistic and everything will be perfect and that everything will be well done for 2021? There will be any shortfalls, hinders, or anything? So I would like to ask that question. Thank you very much.
Honorable Speaker.
Chairperson, thank you very much. It is just a concern on the last slide where it talks about, it speaks about status A at risk. Thanks for putting all this, what you consider them as the risk that will put status A. But I would wish to check, in your opinion, SG, or in your opinion as a team, how are you going to address, because it is very important to address what you have put down as a risk, or what options or other way that will assist you to address all these four things that you have put down as a risk, or do you have it now on the pipeline? Because we cannot only accept the risk, but we need the solutions. What will be the solution to get out of all these you regard as a risk? Thank you.
I don't see any other members want to. Then I therefore hand over to you, SG, for responses. DM, Deputy Minister.
Morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I'm not.
You have flu, that's all.
My voice is small.
Morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
You know, that's much better.
I want to start before the team can venture into responding to other questions. Thank you for the participation. I think as committee members, you took your time to read. It doesn't seem like you listened to the presentation or you were asking from now. You had prepared yourself. We appreciate that, because even ourselves, we took time to prepare the report for the committee. We appreciate that. We report in other committees where we get disappointed that it's as if they do not prepare for us.
We appreciate that. Just two or three which were directed to the executive authority. One is that SSA is looking into new methods of collecting data. That's the first one. I'm not sure who had asked it. So from your normal ways which you would know that SSA is collecting data in this format, we are looking into new innovative ways of collecting data, one, which will also assist us in ensuring that we get the correct data. However, we spend less, but the data becomes correct data. The second one is that the SG, he has met with the chair of the council, and the conversation and the concrete agreement which they have came up with has generated for the institution $45 million. However, that is not enough. So that is a positive side in that way. So there is that conversation, and that allocation will be for the year 2020 until 2021. I think it is correct, and maybe we will take it up that we also push from our side, as you, also the committee, you are re-emphasizing that maybe you feel the issue of SSA is not taken so much seriously, and that treasury must come and have a conversation with the committee so that they can really feel what you're saying. What we can commit from our side is that we will convey the message and push for it. And you can also formally do it on your side so that we can be able to assist each other in finding a lasting solution. But rest assured, colleagues, that amidst all the challenges, that is why we are not shy to come to you and mention the four risks to say this is where we are and these are the risks. It does not necessarily mean that the data which we give you, even the quarterly data that we give you, is not accurate. What we are saying is that we could do more. What we are saying to you is that with the little staff that we have, they go overboard. So they are committed public servants who overstress in terms of what they're supposed to do, which is not an ideal situation. But it does not mean that the institution has flatly collapsed, that we're not able to do anything. Thank you. So I will ask the SG and the team to answer to other questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. The meeting that the Deputy Minister relates to between myself and the Chair of Council was actually convened by the Minister. And we will remember that this committee had raised consistently the matter of funding, including issuing a statement as well as us taking the message to the minister. So when minister realized in the initial letters of allocations we were not going to get funding, the minister took it up upon himself. Let me mention that with the ministerial support, SSA has always had that consistently with all ministers that we have had in the short space of time that they I have been in office, 2 years to be exact. We are serving under a third minister, Minister Radebe, Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, and then Minister Mthembu currently. All ministers have stayed steadfast to raising the issue of funding of state aid. Let me just deal with a few matters, and I'll leave the rest, but I'll deal largely with a few of the last questions that were raised. Honorable CBC, how are we going to address the risks? What we are doing is that we have looked at our structure and said the old structure that we had couldn't deal with sustaining the business of status A. So we looked at the structure, we are implementing a new structure. and implementing that structure, it should respond to the constraints of finances that we are facing. And not only that, as Deputy Minister has indicated, that structure, when we implement it, should respond to emerging data collection that the world is following in relation to harnessing technology, as well as looking at alternative data sources to actually make the bill for collection a lot more affordable and cheaper. And of course, we are lucky because we are also, as government, implementing new strategies. So we are coming up with a new strategy on the 1st of April. And that strategy is directed towards harnessing technology to be able to make it a lot more cheaper for our operations. Because we don't believe that we will ever get all the money that we need, and we need to secure the survival of census. On census testing, Honorable Mutsipe, you don't stop testing on the census, but you have practices, not only us as South Africa, but all over the world, where we are on a 10-year cycle for conducting census. So what we do is we do a mini test, small scale, to understand our logistics, we understand our methods, we follow through how we'll conduct the census. As we do so, we will move over to the pilot test later this year in preparation for the census. And that pilot test will be a lot more larger. We will also test our payment system. So there's nothing we leave to chance. Because once we go to field, we want to be sure that we are solid. So obviously, one of the things that has occurred, we are currently engaging the IEC, is because the IEC calendar for local government elections has been changing, because the IEC has been shifting. So next year there are two major events, local government elections as well as the census. And that's one thing that we cannot test, but we are engaging the IEC, because if we don't manage this issue, there's no way you can run elections and the census in the same space. So they will have to go out of space at a certain point, because you don't want an independent functionary like Stetsa say doing publicity, and it's compounded with political campaigns, and the public doesn't see that. So that's a matter that we are not able to test, because the IEC usually doesn't do as much dry runs as we do. We also test the post-enumeration survey, which helps us. We are one of the few countries in the world that give an undercount. We go and conduct a census, and we run a small survey to see how many people we have missed, so that we can make necessary adjustments in the population. Kenya just released their census now. They don't do a post-enumeration survey, so they tell you, we have counted the people, these are the people. Mozambique runs and do a post-enumeration survey, but when they release their results, we know what happened last year towards elections, where the Statistician General of Mozambique had to step down following the census, and it's not the only one. We saw similar experiences in Australia as well. So this, we are taking this matter very serious of the census. In relation to the COCA, Census of Commercial Agriculture, Honorable Gebekulu, we do collect employment and unemployment information from our quarterly labor force survey, which includes going to the households that are on the farms. But we also collect quarterly employment survey that comes from the fence. there is a difference in these numbers. Obviously, everyone says the numbers should coincide, but they come from two different sources. Because the one comes from your business register, which looks at the firms. The one comes from households. But our headline number, the one that when we release unemployment, it comes from the household, and we do go to the farming communities. We can readily say at any given moment what are the number of jobs that have been gained or lost in agriculture. We can talk about formal, non-agricultural, informal, and we separate those as non-agricultural because we treat agriculture on its own because of its nature and as a sector. We are able also to indicate our share of agriculture in nominal GDP, which is usually between 2 and 3%. But agriculture, as well as construction, tend to create more jobs than their share in nominal GDP consistently on all quotas that we are looking at. So while there are job losses in agriculture at times, the contribution of agriculture does surpass their share in nominal GDP. The reasons why our staff members are leaving are many. We have tried by all means to entice them, offer them opportunities for training and the like. But the biggest thing is financial resources. We haven't been able to promote a single staff member in STATSA since October 2016. We haven't hired a single staff member. Some staff members are carrying 2 or 3 jobs at a go, so there is pressure on them. These are family people, mothers and fathers. When a staff member collapses on duty, I want to see how they've been reporting for duty. It sometimes hurts me the most as a statistician general to find a mother who has been reporting from 6:30 in the morning to 11:30 at night, consistently over 9 days, and then they collapse at work. And we cannot say that is normal. So, and when a staff member is carried by a stretcher out of STATSA, it's because there is pressure. And they are not forced. This is people who volunteer on their own. I've consistently asked this committee that let the committee come and announce to STATSA on a Saturday or Sunday and see the number of staff members that are at work. So, and they are not forced. We don't force them. They sit and plan the work of the year and they adhere to that. But they are breakages at some stage in terms of the ability of how far they can go. The other issue is when they get offers, we lose our staff members to the United Nations, to banks, to Statistics Australia. Where was Peter Yandi when he left initially?
New Zealand,
Statistics New Zealand. We lose them to the World Bank. And when they offer them sometimes 5-6 times what we pay them. So we can't compete. Our junior staff members, some of them middlemen, technical staff, very brilliant. They are offered 4-5 times the salary by a bank. We won't compete. So the only way is if we were able to hire, that's what we were doing. We used to hire, train them, and they get taken. There are only a few of us, all those that are seated there, none of them have an experience of less than 20 years, save perhaps, yeah, Bruce, it's a bit less. But none of us have an experience of less than 20 years. I have been 27 years in the practice of statistics and only working for government. So are the other colleagues other than Bruce who have been in the practice of government and statistics. Because we have been there and we want to stay. And it's not that there are no offers. There are offers that we want to serve our country. And that brings me to the point that is raised by Honorable Shriver in, as regards we don't have money, but we are funding all the team to come here. We are always here in Parliament and in Cape Town due to different demands. In the last week, 2 weeks alone, I've been here two times to come and address different constituencies and gatherings. And Mr. Gineka is here on that. So when he's in Cape Town, we said, come and join us. So the head of user information, he was here last week. Celia is here responsible for strategy in dealing with our province and our district offices. So even as we go back to Pretoria, she's not going back. She's continuing to do her work. Yandi is here on other consultations in relation to our work on the SANS, because the South African National Statistics System goes beyond just status and includes also consulting civil society. And we are going to the United Nations very soon, and there are issues that we need to take along. The one that came specifically for this gathering today with myself, Mr. Bruce Jules, and we had to bring him. But even next week, some of those colleagues or others will be here in Cape Town, they will be in Durban, they will be everywhere. The political parties keep on inviting us. We get invited all over to address the ANC, the EFF, the Inkatha Freedom Party will be inviting us after the 8th of March. They want me in person to be there. I've been raising with Premier Winde of the Western Cape that we haven't gone to address the DA. And the reason is because we don't want statistics. The ANC invites us the most, and they are a user. Government invites us. We don't want to statistics to be seen as an extension of any political party. So we must reach out to all political parties, because the data that we make available is a public good and must be digested by everyone. And even when we release our data, we don't brief minister on what the numbers look like. That is why we see that the decision general a lot more in the public space releasing the numbers. It's because there is independence on methods. There is independence even on the day and time of the release of official statistics, that it's there in the act given by this parliament that the minister may not even interfere on the decision of the statistician general as to how to collect, how to store, and when and how to release information. So the statistician general remains completely independent. And independence can be demonstrated by the outreach of the statistician general to every political party. I was talking to Honorable Holomisa, Bantu Holomisa, and I was saying the UDM is not inviting us. And he was saying, we go to your website, and this time when we go to your website, I will call you and let you know that we were on your website. But otherwise, let me leave the other questions for my colleagues to deal with them. I will, there was a matter, and I think I need to deal with it. Honorable Malatsi, I need to deal with this matter that Honorable Malatsi raised as to whether the statistician general, what was the process leading to the release of the statement by council, and whether the statistician general thinks it's the right way to do. Firstly, is that council chair and I did meet with the minister on budgetary issues. And council has been agitating on the issue. Actually, council members who are independent representatives of the public have been pressurizing the chair of council that they can't offer support for official statistics anymore. I think the chair has done a great job in keeping them together. But they are professionals in their own right. And they have to choose. They serve in different international bodies. They have to choose whether their standing in society can be upheld by associating with the SSA. So are State SA staff members. And we are members of different committees and statistical societies in the world. We have to adhere to certain standards. It's painful for a statistician in official practice to lose their standing because they have gotten a report wrong. So it's not an issue of council alone. It applies to us as well. I'm going to be going to the United Nations very soon. And this statement of council will be raised and will be raised by different agencies at the United Nations, as well as other partners like the World Bank and the IMF. They are going to raise it. And they are going to question the statistician general that please help us understand what is the standing of status. We are among the top five agencies in the world. We get consulted on everything. I chair different committees and in the world. One of the things with this statement is that they might ask me to step down, my colleagues internationally. So it's not a lighter matter. I did meet with council on our regular meeting on Friday. I am a member of council ex officio, so I don't vote with council. So I was aware of these matters. I did alert the Minister of the Development that there is this matter, and the Minister will be meeting with council as well to try and deal with their statement. But Minister couldn't stop them from releasing the statement. They indicated when I told them that I will inform the Minister. They said, we are independent. We cannot, if we go to the Minister to ask whether we'll release our statement or not, it means that we are not independent, the statistician general is not independent. And the minister respected that. The question they have asked me as statistician general is now that if they resign, as a member of council, I have to resign. So I will, if council resigns, I will be resigning, but I'm resigning as a council member. I'm not resigning as statistician general. But it's got much more serious bearings on my standing as statistician general when council resigns. The numbers that we produce will be without cover. And I hope we can avert this crisis. It has become now a national crisis if it goes to that state. But let me leave my colleagues to deal with the other questions. I thought these ones I need to deal with them myself.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. I'll talk to the questions relating to recruitment and disability. The question that, any hope that you'll reduce the vacancy rate to below 10%. The Deputy Minister spoke to the 45 million that we are receiving in the new financial year, and that will be utilized to fill critical positions as identified by the organization. What we have done though is Stats SA, our current establishment and approved headcount is 3,511 in the current financial year. As part of the realignment process, that headcount has been reduced to 3,313. So Stats SA identified 198 posts that would be abolished in terms of our new strategic plan. Currently, our vacancy rate stands at 707. So in terms of the new count, we have filled positions of 2,804 filled positions, which will bring our vacancy rate down to 15.4% in line with the new headcount. But the vacancy rate will still be at that level in the early teens in the foreseeable future. The question, will the realignment lead to job cuts? It will not, because what has happened, the move from the PAPI mode of data collection to CAPI will basically result in the reskilling of staff affected by that process, so that the staff placement committee that has been referred to in, that has been established and referred to in the quarterly progress reporting, considers colleagues affected by the process, and then they are then considered to be placed in other vacant positions within the organization. So definitely no job cuts. So also to highlight the 198 posts abolished are basically the posts that are already vacant. Regarding disability and SMS members that are disabled, out of the total of 41, we have two members at levels 13 and 14 in the organization that are disabled. The Indaba that we had that was referred to was basically in terms of our HR and DPSA guidelines was an internal disability Indaba. We were creating internal awareness regarding disability, and that was held on the 25th of November, where the disability program covered issues like disability etiquette, reasonable accommodation, which basically means that anybody with a disability must be provided with the tools within the working environment to be able to fulfill their job functions. Then we also had a doctor talk on vitiligo and albinism, and then simulation exercises were concluded. So that is basically an internal campaign that the organization ran. The ESG spoke about staff members that leave the organization, and the bulk is for greener pastures. Currently, the organization has a counter offer policy, but at the moment, due to funding constraints, we are also not at liberty to try and retain skills where the counter offer packages are quite substantially different. What we also want to be mindful of and bring to the committee's attention is that the 45 million that we have received from National Treasury will not reduce the current over expenditure that we have on COE. So the committee will be well aware that the current financial year, the COE expenditure will remain, and in for the foreseeable future until we get some funding from Treasury to actually resolve that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the issue of farmers and their cooperation, we were very happy with the cooperation from farmers in the centres of commercial agriculture. In fact, as we would be releasing in the latter part of March, we will also be launching a thank you campaign for farmers and make sure that we release the results to farmers as well and the farming unions. On the issue of service delivery issues being logged, we haven't got a campaign for that because service delivery issues doesn't get logged at...
That's the same. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just take the last question on... honourable members, colleagues, on whether we ever come across violent communities when we're doing the census. We do come across areas where it is not safe for our field workers to get there or to go and count. So what we do is to be in partnership with the community leaders in those areas, we work with the SAPS in those areas, ward councillors. And we also try and make sure that we appoint people who come from those areas to go and count. We try as much as possible to have field workers who know the area to be the ones who go and count there. And lastly, we have something we call a Know Your Enumerator campaign, where we'll make sure that the community knows who's going to come and count, what they look like, what number they should call if there are problems, So we do a lot of effort to try and work around this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to respond to the question on managing the strategic risks. So the SG has put in place integrated monthly and quarterly reporting where we're actively managing all the risks. We have just completed a full reprioritization process in Stats SA again to see which in our risk rating, which areas are burning, which areas are at risk but at the orange level, and which areas we are still managing well, although under difficult circumstances. And based on that, we are basically moving resources around, especially to ensure that our core national statistics are protected at all costs. You know, so if one of our statistical areas are under threat, we do make decisions to move technical people to those areas. Of course, at a long-term level, it's not sustainable, but, you know, we are trying to manage how we move, and it's for that reason why we had to discontinue some of our value-add products. So we are actively, and we've also introduced like a strategy scorecard, which we monitor the movement. Is this area going into red? Is it, you know, is it in a green zone? Is it in an orange zone? And what strategic decisions we need to make to protect the quality of basic statistics at all costs. So that is a rigorous process that we continuously do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I don't see any further questions from members. Or Honourable Clerk?
Chairperson, can I just ask, I mean, I'm just looking at this resolution practice management team we have. If we could just add to this, that the Minister of Finance should also be invited to this committee in order just to deal with this matter. Thank you.
No, I have already talked to the Secretary of the Committee to do that on our behalf. SG, thank you very much. You have done your best. Now we are going to invite Brent South Africa, but before that I will allow the DM to just give an opening comment. And then, yeah.
Yes.
Welcome, you welcome. Sorry for that.
No.
Welcome. Okay. Formal introductions, because there are people we know on this side who were with us. Now they are no longer with us. We are confused. Yes.
Of stabilizing Brand SA. At that time,
it was before we could split and take GCIS and MDDA directly to communication when they were still with us. We are happy to report to the committee that part of the commitment which we had made even in the budget speech, we have lived up to them. We have a board. We have a fully functional board, as Brenda said, and it's led by Ms. Tobias. That is why you are saying she was on the other side. Today she's coming on the other side. I will give her to greet the team and also to introduce the team, and they get on with the presentation and we'll take it from there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I should say up front, my name is Tandi Chobayas Pokono. I used to sit on the other side of the house. Now I'm this side. And I was fascinated to see my other colleague from my other life now being the chairperson of this committee. So also I need to appreciate that this committee has changed a lot. There's a lot of new faces. So you'll pardon me if I'm not very familiar. I'm familiar with Nkosi, with Honorable Manas. I need to get used to calling you Honorable now, and all other members. With me, I have Mrs. Tohom Dise. She's from marketing. And we also have Dr. Krishni Kisondu. She's also responsible for corporate services. And we've got Mr. Khumbuzo Siripe, who's responsible for our finance. I need to apologize for the CEO because we're to split. And she is on an assignment in Australia. She left last night. So I said, I'll hold the fort and come to the portfolio. And since it was our first meeting, we were wondering whether should we bring the whole team or are we going to be killed for that. And I said to the board, please, pardon me, I'll leave you behind, because I used to question when I was on the other side about big delegations. So I don't want to be punished for that. So I said, stay behind. One day we'll bring you one by one, so that the committee can familiarize themselves with your good selves and understand who you are. So, Chair, I'm going to just give a heads up of comments, and then the presentations will be done by the team, because the board was appointed at the fourth quarter. So I'm giving you the second and third quarter report when we were not part. So you'll understand why we'll give the team to get into it, but we'll just give you a heads up. So, as I have said already, that the board was appointed on the fourth quarter. The board had started reporting deadlines, and at that time there was one sole trustee, which was Mr. Jeff Rothschild, who convened special meetings to deal with the quarterly reports and then submitted to the executive authority. So it was during this quarter that the president dealt with the nomination of the candidates, and then we were appointed. And the AG at that time concluded an external audit of 2018 to 2019 financial year last July. And in that report, the outcome of the audit was a qualified opinion in payables and expenditure due in the main to the migration of the financial debt. So it was one issue that created a qualification. It was just migration to new data. So also at the end, there was issues of vacant positions that were not filled in the finance department. And during this period also, BSSA was faced with challenges. And the most notable ones were the ones that were reported in public, which I think members are privy to. And apart from that, the good news is that Brand South Africa was involved in very important activities, and among the ones that our Deputy Minister likes very much, it's the one that is called Play Your Part. She has played a very pivotal role, and I know I was told that we got standing ovation for that, for the work. So we're very proud of you, Deputy Minister, for the work that you've done. And one of the activities launched in Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal and in Mpumalanga, in the bank in particular. But also we participated in WEF last year in September. That meeting was held here in Cape Town, and Breast South Africa hosted an Ease of Doing Business seminar on the 4th of September. And we did this at the margins of WEF, and the president delivered the keynote address. So this is the heads up of the type of work that was done in those quarters by Brand South Africa that made South Africa a very proud country, because the president had to also recognize that seminar by giving keynote address. But there were also various engagements that were undertaken. One of them was the Global South African Program with the United States of America, the United Kingdom, and the People's Republic of China, Qatar, and Germany. And during that quarter, the entity developed a 5-year strategic plan, which was a draft at that time, and the annual performance plan, which was signed by the new board as we came in. So the documents were signed and sent to the ministry for approval. On top of the work that has been done, Chair, in terms of the mid-term review that was done between 17 to 18 of October, the review was meant to evaluate the organization's performance against the 2019-2010 APPs and targets, which were for the period of the 1st of April and the 30th of September, and also to assess the organization's readiness to implement projects and programs that were a reminder, and to review the organizational financial budget and performance. The budget, when we come to that, I will leave to the DM to speak to it, because she passionately speaks about us. As that's the first words I got when she said to me, fight for your budget, because there is no adequate budget for you to be able to do your work. So the draft of the strategic plans were submitted, and Brand South Africa delivered a presentation to the portfolio committee around last year, and it has briefed the portfolio on the Play Your Part program, and there's been other engagements that I have mentioned before. So Honorable Chairperson, based on that, I will want to stop there to give the officials an opportunity to make further presentations on quarter three and quarter two reports, and I hope you will endorse our report, and we'll take questions from there. Thank you very much, Honorable Members.
The floor is yours, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone. As already introduced, my name is Thoko Modise, and I'm the Head of Communications at Brand South Africa. My presentation will focus on the review of quarter three, targets not achieved, and performance against quarter three, governance, human resources, and finance. So the overview for quarter three for Brand South Africa is that 17% of the targets were not met, and 83 were met. Out of these targets, one comes from program one, which is administration, and three come from brand marketing and reputation management, which means in total four targets out of 24 set. And the targets not achieved were primarily in the administration section with 15%, which is supposed to be 15% arrears on budget versus expenditure. And this is due to tenders that had to be cancelled and moved to different quarters in the postponement of certain projects. And then under marketing and the four marketing platforms were not met. These were then deferred to quarter three. And the last ones are the activations for Australia, which is now currently where they are, the team is, and where the CEO is, was deferred to this quarter. So I thought we should just briefly give you a bit of why Brand South Africa exists at a glance, so that we get context on what we do and why we were appointed. So what we do is, we are the official marketing agency that was established to manage the reputation of South Africa. How do we do this? We do this through proactively developing marketing and reputation management and communication strategies. Because the point is somebody needs to be able to focus on how South Africa's image and reputation is perceived globally, and so that we are able as a country to compete effectively.
And what is it that we believe in? Is that we believe that we need to inspire and ignite the passion of our citizens so that the citizens of this country are the brand ambassadors for the country. And what are the key flagship programs we have? As already mentioned, Play Your Part is one of them. We also have the South African Competitiveness Forum, which is more of a business forum, where businesses look at elements including the ease of doing business in South Africa. What are the factors that make South Africa attractive, etc. We also have what is called the Nation Brand Forum, which is a platform that is used to make sure that all stakeholders are aligned in how we speak and drive the messaging about the country. And then we have what is called the Global South Africans Program, which is a program for South Africans who live abroad, because most of the time negative messaging comes through them when they speak about the country. And so we have to be able to influence them on how they must speak about the country. And then we, of course, at platforms like West Africa, and in fact even the AU Summit recently, is where we develop the messaging so that Team SA, who is a combination of civil society stakeholders, business stakeholders, and government stakeholders, are aligned when we go overseas and we represent the country. So our vision basically is to make sure that South Africa is an admired destination which is viable for business, investment, tourism, and for people to come here and study. So in terms of our strategic objectives, how do they link back to why we exist? Is that overall that we need to enhance the awareness of South Africa. So we conduct research that specifies and aligns and tells the world how the South Africa is performing against peer countries, against other countries in the continent, and against the global competitors. The point is for us to improve the reputation and perceptions of South Africa, because this links back to active citizenship, social cohesion, nation building, job creation, and entrepreneurship as well. The point is that we need to be able to change perceptions so that people can view us in a different way. The positive outlook of the country correlates with increased pride and patriotism. And then as far as the brand identity, image, and competitiveness, this is, again, through showcasing what South Africa is capable of and where the strengths are in order for us to attract investment. Cohesive approach when promoting the marketing and nation brand amongst targeted stakeholders, again, is what I said, that we have the Nation Brand Forum where we try and align with all stakeholders so that we all sing from the same hymn book when we talk about South Africa. And then the GSA program falls under this one, where nation brand advocacy is encouraged. And then, of course, we partner with stakeholders, whether they are business stakeholders, whether they are civil society stakeholders. So what were the highlights of this quarter? The major achievements we've had this year is that we've been able to communicate the appeal and attractiveness of South Africa. We plan to maintain this momentum by elevating the outcomes of the investment conference, which was key for us in this quarter. And as of course, now as we speak, we were just at the EU, and we're also just at West Davos. So what we then do in the promotion for domestic platform, we the Nation Brand Forum was hosted this quarter, the SA Investment Conference was also co-hosted. And of course, Zozi Tunzi's win has been a big win for us from an image and perception point of view. Because the media coverage became very positive and the world got to know more about who we are through her crown. And then the appointment of our board has also kind of changed, has stabilized how we are viewed and how coverage has come across for us. And then on international platforms, of course, in this quarter, we had the BRICS Summit in Brazil where the team traveled with the presidency. The World Rugby team gave us a lot of boost in terms of image, positive coverage and image. And as I said, Zozi Tunzi's win was also quite good. Now, what were the things that drove certain uncertainty and negativity? Xenophobic incidents, attacks on foreign nationals, and gender-based violence were a huge negative that pulled us down in terms of coverage. Also, our domestic perceptions research is showing that more and more South Africans are not trusting government, and South Africans themselves don't trust each other as individuals. The commissions of inquiry into state capture, on the one hand, it is a principle that is a state system which is about transparency and accountability. But because it is constantly on our screens, it then becomes the news of the day that drives negative, the negative narrative all the time. And of course, as we know, load shedding is not doing us any favors from a perception and image point of view. So we do this this tracking of coverage in order for us to be able to be responsive to what the narrative in the market. So domestically, we were 18% negative, and internationally, 27%. And what were the driving factors on that? Locally, it was corruption, which is the investigation into state capture. Internationally, it was mainly xenophobia in this quarter. We've also found that xenophobia consistently comes up, and it becomes the driver of all news, whether it's domestic and internationally. But we found that sports is one way of utilizing positive coverage, because South Africa is known for its sporting prowess. And Brand South Africa implemented a program called Sports Friday. And as you can see that at number two, we have a lot of screens there, because that is one way of driving nation building and social cohesion, which increases the levels of pride and patriotism for South Africans. And then we usually then have these response action plans so that we are able to address some of these issues. One of those is we drive campaigns, for example, on how South Africans need to relate to our African brothers. And we are going to use the AU to leverage the fact that we are the chair of the AU for this year, and drive the messaging that so that we can change that negative perception about South Africa. We also plan to partner with the UN Women on their initiatives aimed at combating gender-based violence. I will not go through all of them, but we do have a plan in action. This is a reflection of how the impact of not having a brand agency, PR agencies, and a digital agency can have an impact on how our advertising value equivalent can drop. Last year, this time, we were sitting at 44 million, and this quarter, we are sitting at 2 million. Yes, last year this time we were sitting at 44.7 million, and this year we're sitting at 2.8 million. And I will ask my colleague to then take us through the next slide.
Thank you. For the quarter three, with regard to the unqualified audit opinion, because the audit is an annual audit from AG, so we currently have interventions to ensure that we improve our audit opinion for the upcoming audit, which is mainly we have already started to implement the monthly reconciliations, as well as ensuring that monitoring of the performance of accounting system. When in the past we used to only produce financials on a quarterly basis, now much more stringent, we actually now produce financials on a monthly basis, so that we ensure that we're not necessarily preparing for the audit at the end of the financial year, but we start now with the groundwork. And as well as the 30-day payment tracking for suppliers to be paid within 30 days. So we want to lead as example in that regard, to ensure that we don't only stick to the 30-day payment period, but we reduce to a period of 7 days, so that we can be able to ensure that they can also influence other entities in ensuring that the suppliers are paid within the 30-day period. We have also introduced the Risk and Governance Committee as a tool to assist us to mitigate the risk of failing to meet the performance objectives, where it will also act as a committee that will assist us in terms of implementing the controls and monitoring the controls if they are implemented effectively. In this quarter, we have also been able to ensure that we also meet the target of the internal audit report, where the internal audit looked at our quarter in terms of the controls that we've implemented, and they gave us a satisfactory report in that regard. With regard then to the 5% variance where it was not met, it was mainly due to the tender cancellations which were postponed to the fourth quarter, as well as the project activations which were postponed to the fourth quarter. So for us to ensure that we continue to actually now spend as per the budget, we have requested then the Treasury to give us an extension, which we got a positive response from Treasury for the extension. So to ensure that the money gets to be spent as per the plan.
And then this slide, there is no variance, as you can see, all targets have been met, and this is under research. And then this one, the 16 market reports, during midterm review, we were able to look back at what the research we have is doing for us and how we can improve on getting more detailed information. So we've then proposed that we implement a new study called the South Africa Global Reputation Study, which is going to start in the next quarter. PYP activities, all targets have been met. Activations for PYP, which utilize and to promote constitutional awareness. This one is very key because we did some research that told us that South Africans are not always conscious or aware of what their rights are. So we go around the country to try and educate and inform citizens of the various rights that they enjoy. So in this particular quarter, we were able to even exceed the target of 3 activations. Because we're in the Western Cape, Northwest, Western Cape, and the 16 days of activism in the Free State. And then the 4 marketing platforms, as already mentioned by the CFO, we had to delay due to the extension that we were only given later in the year by Treasury for us to extend brand agencies. And this is just an example, a show and tell of what we do and what it looks like on the ground. Again here, we do communication interventions that drive positive stories on multimedia platforms. So this is the cross sections of either op-eds, articles, interviews across the world, domestically and internationally. This is a continuation of those 25 communication interventions. Oh yeah, here this is we try and track the engagement levels on social media. To see whether or not the content we put out, people are receptive to. And this is an annual target, so we usually just do a comparison between quarter one and quarter two. However, where we are sitting now, we are looking at how we're going to combine it and report it at the end of the fiscal. So there is no variance. There was no need to report on this one. Media activities, we engage with the media consistently every quarter, and we plan whether it's domestic media or international media. So, for example, in this quarter, we had African media that came from Zimbabwe, Zambia, Swaziland. There were about 4 or 5 countries where we engage with them, and we take them through South Africa's performance, and we sometimes even take them to key points of national interest in South Africa. And then we had another brand, South Africa media engagement, where we were unpacking the role of South Africa in BRICS and then the upcoming AU, at the time it was the upcoming AU summit, and we got a huge coverage on that. And then of course we had a Limpopo media tour in collaboration with Limpopo Tourism Agency. As mentioned earlier, this was the Nation Brand Forum where we had the minister as our main speaker, which got a lot of traction and a lot of coverage. This is again our show and tell on the extent to which we got reach for the media engagement in South Africa. For international platforms, this target was met and exceeded because we were able to leverage on partnerships with Regency Global, and we were able to identify opportunities with the Business Magazine to promote the country. And this is an ongoing one. It's going to be on over a period of 12 months. Play Your Part domestic platforms. I'm told that you already know about Cleopat. This was also, this target was also met, where we were able to promote PYT messages in the form of squeeze bags during the World Cup, and we utilized the airport to drive the messaging there as well. This was just one of those partnerships where IM Tech Africa, we partnered with as well. And then again here, as I said, we were able to promote, use the Rugby World Cup and use their magazine as well, with a reach of 11.1 million during the World Cup. Nation brand alignment training target was met here. And new users, we have a portal on our website where people can register and download the imagery and are guided on how to use the branding on their, for their own purposes. And this was, this target was also exceeded. We also, as you know, partner with Play Your Part ambassadors, and we have to report on which ones they are and how often and which provinces we partner with them. This target was not met due to two reasons. One, Australia was then moved from quarter three to quarter four, and then several engagements were supposed to host in Hong Kong. At the time, there were protest action in Hong Kong, so we had to defer them to quarter four. But the ones we were able to achieve, this was one in Hong Kong, which was a business breakfast, and then this one was in Wenzhou, which was a GSA activation. China actually has a lot of South Africans who live and work there. Partnership with business stakeholders, we met and exceeded the target. We had a BRICS business roundtable in the Western Cape and KZN. We also collaborated with the Post Bank World Savings Day. And then we did the PYP corporate collaboration with the KFC State of Hope address, and as well as the SASA. Partnerships with government partners, we were able to meet and exceed that. Again, all targets here were met and exceeded. This was a global South African activation in India. And I will ask Dr. Kay to take us through this one.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the board chairperson has already alluded to, the president appointed a new board on the 28th of October 2019. The board assumed office in November 2019, and so the board is currently in progress to settle into their business and take on their mandates of the respective subcommittees. There was an induction as a result of the board being quite new to help them familiarize themselves with the mandate of Brand South Africa and the governance framework. The matter, there were quite a few disciplinary matters at the beginning of the financial year. The one that remains unresolved is the CEO matter pending the finalization of disciplinary matters from the minister's side. But the CFO matter has been concluded during this quarter. And this has contributed a lot in terms to the stability of the organization, where at the beginning there were quite a few disciplinary matters that were still pending. I'll go on, Chairperson, to human resources. In as far as equity steps are concerned, Brand South Africa is predominantly female, with 64% female employees, 36% male employees. We have a quite a high vacancy rate at the moment at 19.3%, and this is really as a result of a moratorium being in place last year from January, which was then uplifted by our minister in July of 2019. Since the moratorium was uplifted, we have progressed in terms of the filling of our posts, and we are at an advanced stage in the second batch of advertisements. The intention also is to ensure that we have all categories represented. Where we currently have a gap in terms of the number of disabled employees in the organization, we taking the effort a bit further to advertise not only traditionally in our newspapers, but also on social media, on the Disabled People's website of South Africa, where one of our board members is the president of Disabled People of South Africa. So we're taking it further to ensure that we attract a wider pool of candidates that will then respond to the categories where we currently have a gap in Brand South Africa. We are overrepresented, as I say, in terms of females, particularly African females, and therefore in Brand South Africa, we do need to look to employ colored males, Indian males, and also white males.
When it comes to finance, as I previously noted, there are three main programs. I didn't have my mic on. We've got three main programs. One is brand marketing. We had a variance of 26.7%, mainly because of the cancellation of the PR agency tender, as well as research. And there were postponements in terms of the projects that were supposed to have happened in third quarter, now happening in the fourth quarter. And for the stakeholder relations, we had two main projects, which was GSA Australia, which was supposed to happen in the third quarter. It's currently happening right now, as well as the WEF divorce, which already happened in January. So as a result, that we still on track to spend at the budget as of 31st of March. Under administration, we were on track because the variance was below the 5%.
Okay, well, shall I carry on and do two as well?
Yes.
As far as quarter two is concerned, we were sitting at 8% not achieved and 92% achieved. Out of the 25 targets met, out of the 25 targets, only two were not met. And the two targets not achieved were in administration as well as marketing. And as explained by the CFO, there was a delay in extending the contracts of the brand agencies.
Okay. With the two targets, one for unqualified audit opinion, it is relating to the previous financial period. But since then we have implemented the internal controls to ensure that we are able to address the audit findings.
And then for this target, enhanced understanding of the nation plan performance, all targets were met, except for one which was not applicable for this quarter, which is an annual target. Improve nation brand reputation and perceptions among South Africans, PYP exceeded, and activations in the provinces, target met, and for the target for marketing platforms, only one platform was utilized due to the delay with the brand agencies. Again, with the communication interventions, we were able to meet our target. All targets were met for this objective, which is the improved nation brand reputation and perceptions domestically and internationally. As I said, the user engagement, which we measure on an annual basis. Again, here, targets were met for all of these. Awareness of the nation brand identity, image, and competitiveness. We used Euronews for the CEO's No campaign.
Now, the CEO's No campaign is a campaign that uses CEOs of multinationals that are based in South Africa talking about their experience of investing in South Africa and from a personal perspective. And it has proven to be a very successful campaign for us. Nation Brand was promoted on these platforms and the target was exceeded. Again, we went through the masterclass training from Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo. And then where we partner with stakeholders, we met the target and exceeded it. Again, we are getting a lot more registrations from interested stakeholders parties. PYP ambassadors, as I said, we engage and we work with them closely, and when they activate in the provinces, and these were the ones for this quarter. GSA activations in this quarter were met and exceeded, which is making up for the shortfall in the following quarters. Coordinated marketing activities, we partnered for the SA Top 50 brands, the Nation Builder in Good Company Conference. We partnered with IQ Business School as well as the Financial and Economic Inclusion for Refugees in South Africa. We also met the targets with partners in government or state institutions. All targets here were met as well. And then I'll hand over to Dr. Kay again.
Thank you, Chairperson. Similar to quarter three, with regards to quarter two, we were in a situation at Brand South Africa where our equity stats are very much imbalanced towards females and lesser towards males, so we do need to create the balance. And with regards to the disability population of employees in the organization, we also need to improve there. As I just mentioned before, we have a concerted drive to improve or elevate the number of disabled employees in the organization, but not just, at the lower levels. We're also looking at different interventions to improve disability at senior management level in the organization. We have a concerted drive in terms of our recruitment to down manage the number of vacancies that we have, and at the end of quarter four, we should be showing significant improvement as well as vacancy rate much lower than what it currently is. The next slide just emphasizes what I've just mentioned, and to say that the organization is committed to down managing the number of vacancies in the organization at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. With regard to the budget versus manager, on the program for the stakeholder relations, it was mainly due to the West Africa costs only expenses at that quarter, and as well as for the program for the administration, it was mainly due to the legal costs, which were significantly increased in the second quarter, but have since stabilized in the third quarter, as well as the timing difference for the expenditure for the IT network upgrade.
That is the end of my presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. We are now allowed. Honorable Muzipa is the end. Honorable Glass, Honorable Fraser, Honorable Malobani. Let me write you down. Malobane and then the Song. Ndoli, Sivisi, okay.
Thank you, Professor. According to the reports that we were given, there are disciplinary measures that were taken for, like the CFO. Can we give the findings of the disciplinary hearing
in line with the CEO who was suspended, can we also get the outcome of the suspension? And then in terms of the PYP, Play Your Part, what kind of programs are taking place? Can we maybe clarify what programs are those? And then which rural areas have you already gone through, and which criteria are you using to go on in those areas? Thank you very much.
Honorable Som.
Thank you, Chair. For me, I think I will ask Chair Problems also appreciate the appointment of the board, which then is one of our areas of oversight that we're ticking the boxes in terms of his speed and all that. And we hope then the relevant senior management will be appointed as a matter of agency without undermining the due processes of appointment, as it were. That's one, Chair. Two, Chair, is the which is the question now, is that what tool or measure existing in place that informs Brand SA or to come to a conclusion that our South Africa as a country, image and reputation has improved in terms of economic activities, as it were. I don't want to make an example, but I want the tools and the system that we can also monitor ourselves when we oversight through you. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ntuli.
Chairperson, thank you. I picked up the mentioning of the stakeholders that they are working with on the ground. Now I wanted to check as to how do they identify the stakeholders on the ground. And secondly, are there any links for Brand SA for working relations with local government and local government or legislatures or provincial legislatures. That is one. Two, I wanted to check in terms of mentioning the suspensions. How long does the suspension, in your view, take? And were those suspensions with or without pay? Regarding the xenophobic matters, I wanted to check whether you are able to get maybe a platform to clarify, as well as a, to clarify some of the issues as and when they are perpetrating as xenophobia, because some of the things, particularly within the country, it will be clear that other than being named as xenophobia, it is crime. Now, do you have any platform, maybe, so that the world outside there could understand as to what exactly is happening on the ground? Now, the negativity that you witnessed or you observed, particularly, yes, on xenophobia and self-care, if you can maybe expatiate on in terms of the state capture, because state capture is there for the clarity and for the clarity, particularly on corruption issues, etc. Now, if now the commission is there to clarify such issues, why negativity? Oh, okay.
Ignore that.
Okay. I wanted to check
in terms of these like bozozi, as to do you partner with them or support them prior the final result? You mentioned the issue of rights, to assist people understanding their rights. We've observed in the country the farm workers as part of the communities that are victimized a lot. We've seen some in the coffins and do you have any link with maybe farm workers or farm, there are some committees as well, because to work with them and let them understand the rights, as you were mentioning. Thank you.
Honorable Sibisi.
Angibonge, Chairperson. Brand SA, one of their aims or one of their main aims is to serve and improve the image and reputation of the country so that it would be able to influence our economy. So in your presentation, you stated that xenophobia is one of the leading drivers of negativity on South Africa, which is a fact or which is a truth. But now, as a Brand SA, or again on your Brand SA equity statistics, in terms of demographic, in terms of employment, colored, Indian and whites are less represented in terms of employment. I'm not sure, when you look at xenophobia, is it not xenophobia what you are applying, where there are some groups that are less represented? I mean, when you are saying out of 40 or out of 50 staff, I don't know, you can boldly say that you have employed one person of color, yet you are saying as Brand South Africa, you want to promote South Africa. Should it happen that at some stage this is being questioned, which is not showing, a fully representation of South Africa? Because we are told, or we know, that we are a rainbow nation, and we should be portrayed as being a rainbow nation in whatever we are doing. I wish to check, I'm not sure, what was the reason behind in terms of having a certain group with a lesser percentage, or how are you going to address these imbalances? Because we want to see you to be a really Brand South Africa. Thank you.
Brand SA, response. Oh, Maloban. I've been checking. I didn't see hands. Maloban, and then Honorable Clark, Honorable Schreiber thereafter.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first congratulate Brand SA for making sure that in the ESCO, women are there. Thank you very much for that. And also, my question, it will be also on the issue of xenophobia, because when you are speaking of that, this issue, it dents the image of SA. So in the light of recent attack on foreign nationals and women abuse, what kind of intervention as Brand SA did you embark on locally and internationally to promote that image of this country?
and which countries were mostly targeted to promote this image of SA. The other thing that I want to a clarification on is that who nominates ambassador and how is that done? Thank you.
Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know if any research has been done in terms of expropriation of land without compensation and what effect that has in terms of foreign investment coming into our country. Just today you read Mike Pompeo, who's the US Secretary of State, saying it would have catastrophic repercussions on investment in this country. And I've just returned from Germany where there were 26 participants from all over the world, and that was the first question I was asked in that symposium, is this issue. And it would be very interesting to see if any research has been done and what the outcome of that research was.
Honorable Schreiber.
Thank you, Chair. My question is directed at the Honorable Deputy Minister. One of the issues that we saw up on the slide there regarding negative perception is around state capture, and it's specifically a sentence that says the fact that there have been no convictions for state capture. So I'd like to hear from the Deputy Minister. This committee received an analysis of the SONA speech from the President, and as the Deputy Minister in the Presidency, I'd like her to maybe respond to the following quote from that document. It says that in case of state capture, government has to wait on the Commission of Inquiry to finalize its work to propose recommendations concerning the information and evidence presented to it by witnesses. It would not be prudent to act on information and evidence now until the Commission makes a determination on the matter, because it would be sub judice and therefore litigious against the state and prosecuting authorities to act on it. I'd like to hear from the Honourable Deputy Minister whether she agrees with this. Thank you.
I think they always speak the truth, because we love South Africa and we want to save the country. And I'm going to appeal to you as the committee whom we come and report to. And also to appeal to my colleagues who are going to report to give responses that sugarcoating issues and trying to hide so that we can live here with smiles and you giving us accolades that the committee is doing, that the unit is doing well. While it's not going to assist us, it will backfire at the end. I want us to start from that premise. When I started, I said to you, when we got into this portfolio, the first thing that we said was that the institution is not stable. It needs assistance itself, and MDD at the time, for MDD could be taken to communication to the assistant. And we undertook a process of one, ensuring that we stabilize the institution. Stabilizing it means one, when we got to Brand SA, there was no organization. You had an institution where there was an acting CEO who was fired from a department of communication. She's still there. She's just abroad on task, whatever task of the institution. You had a CFO who was suspended. You had a board which had one person, Mr. Joe Frostchild. I'm giving you back so that I can answer your question. We ensured that we get a board. The first task of the board, when we officially met with them at the union building, one was to say to them, we have made commitments in our budget speech, also commitments which were made by the president that we're going to stabilize our institutions despite the history where they come from. The board was presented with a report which came from an independent auditing, I forget the word, firm, which was submitted to them, and they made recommendations. And part of the recommendations, and I'm going to say them to you, was that the CEO must be removed from the institution. I hope it's a correct word. Dismissed. In terms of the laws which guide the board, they took a decision themselves and made a resolution. That resolution is sitting with us. If I say us, I mean me and the minister, for what we call concurrence, so that we can. And what we are doing is that we are seeking legal advice from our side based on what the board has told us. Now, it must not look like there is nothing which is happening. The board has acted in that result. We are waiting on our side for a legal opinion in terms of, now that the board has made their own resolution, before we can sign, especially the minister, because it's their accounting authority, even if Brenda says it's delegated to me, signing, let's get a legal opinion so that we do things correctly. The second one, so there's progress there. The other thing about the issue of the CFO, just to bring it to light, was that you had a CFO who was sent home, and the CFO was not even being paid. And when we sought for legal advice, we were told that thing is wrong. You must pay him legally, even if you have suspended him, something along those lines. And we corrected that so that he gets paid until the issue is solved, and the issue of the CFO has been solved. Throughout, when we came to the committee, actually in the budget speech, if you remember when you go and then, we said in Brenda say we had 12 vacancies. I think we are left with 3, if I'm correct. You will correct me. I think we are left with 3. It's the CEO, the chief marketing officer, is the CFO. The rest we have advertised. If they are not on the website, they are in newspapers. Others, we are busy with issues of shortlisting. And. I don't agree. My politics does not agree to say if an institution has got 60 women, then there is a problem. I don't agree with those politics. I don't agree with them. And maybe it can be a debate for another day. And for me, when we say we address affirmative action, we address balancing of genders, it does not mean that if you reach a number of women and there are 50, therefore you have achieved. In fact, if it's 100%, what would be wrong with that? You know, it can be a debate for another day, and I don't think that's the approach we must be taking, that there is a lot of women. It can't be a lot. I don't know where it came from, but I had it alone. I'm not. It can be a debate for another day, Chair, for a session to say it can't be wrong that we have more women, therefore it's wrong. In fact, we must be speaking about capacity. We must be speaking about the correct person being placed at the correct portfolio to do the job. You see, with the issue of state capture, we all want solutions. We want those who are alleged to have stolen, alleged to have done wrong, to be brought to book. And I think, if I am correct, this question I also received it, and I think when I was in the NCOP, actually the house collapsed, and there was a break for 15 minutes, because I refused to answer the question. I think it was you. I can't remember, it was somebody from the A. The house adjourned for some time, and I'm glad you are bringing it back today. Our posture is that as much as we want solutions as South Africans. In fact, chapter 14 of the NDC speaks about, if you want to, this ethical, capable developmental state that you're talking about, keeping of corruption and so on, if we don't strengthen chapter 14 and ensure that it becomes a reality, we are doomed, all of us. Corruption is not good for the country. We can debate it the whole day. But in the same process, it will look like it will be in futile that while the Zondo Commission is in process, we are in a hurry to say, prosecute. This one is the court of public opinion must dictate to us that therefore because somebody went and said, I allege that I'm a deputy minister in a house and I bought a grocery at 3 o'clock, then when it becomes news, therefore the NPA must then come and arrest you, therefore you are found guilty based on the court of public opinion. What we should be doing and what I know why we are doing, especially in the presidency, is to say, let us fast check, but in that fast checking, everything must be done with due diligence to find honest, lasting solutions to those who have done wrong and those who are late and have not done wrong. And at no stage should you, Chair, through you and the committee, feel that it's as if that it's a peer exercise, nothing will happen. It's painful, of course. We want answers very quickly. It's like with us, we want the issue of the CEO to be solved very quickly. It would be nice for us that when we go to the budget speech, I could imagine myself, my opening line saying, when we were here, there was no CEO in the board. Before I can tell you our future plans, all is well, we have all is well. You know what I'm saying? But you can't want to flood processes and jump, even when we have put the very same laws. Those laws are put by us. The commission was wanted by us so that we can find solutions. And I think we need to be patient, but what we must push for is, let us start to see action. If those ones which they say they are ready, let them prosecute. The ones which are still under investigation, let them be done so. Also, we don't want a situation where we create, we start to want to push the NPA to act in a hurry. We are going to put a wrong picture for the NPA that they are illegitimate. They don't know what they are doing. They are arrested. They are going back. Rather, when they are ready and they are sure of their story, then they act. Unlike acting and then reversing, it will deal with the credibility of the institution. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Honourable Chair, let me start with the questions asked by Honourable Lison, especially on the issue of image and the reputation and the tools and the systems we have in place. In fact, Honourable Chair, I'm going to make a request that at some point we must allow Dr. B, who's the head of research, to come and make a presentation in the portfolio committee, because he made a very interesting presentation about the perception of the reputation of South Africa in, you know, getting into details. And that's one unit that actually DM we want to empower, because he's the only person working in that unit and doing a very important work of analysis in terms of research. So that I would suggest that we get Dr. P to come here and make a presentation. In relation to Honorable Makos, on issues of xenophobia, actually I thought the DM was going to talk about it, because there are two, if not three, programs that she's passionate about, the PYP, the GB, the gender violence, mm-hmm. and the issue of xenophobia. She has made calls in the public in the past about xenophobia. And I want us not to get into a debate, but to get our communications to respond to how we've dealt with issues of xenophobia from our perspective. Because remember, we don't only manage the reputational integrity of South Africa, but we also deal with economic prospects. We look at, for instance, Africa as an important investment destination, and one of the countries that has stable economies, not necessarily stable economies, but that has prospects. One is Nigeria, Egypt, Algeria, and so on. So if there's a perception that you are xenophobic against Nigerians when we want to do business,
And you know, in terms of free trade agreements that South Africa has signed in the past, so one of the key ones that was announced by the president last year, it was our relationship, particularly with Nigeria. So we manage it in such a way that we do not hamstring the economic prospects that South Africa carry to make business in our continent. So it's a matter that we take very seriously. So a thorough presentation will be made as to what is the strategy. And remember, because the strategy and approach is perhaps how we do it, we'll do it in such a way that you not get a hype in the public discourse, because it's a matter that strategy and we need to look at it. In terms of state capture, actually we do participate in state capture. We wrote to the Zondo Commission to say that any time that the Zondo Commission wants information at Brand South Africa, we are prepared to come and give evidence at any time, because we believe that we need to deal with corruption in a very firm manner. So at any point, if in our institution corruption has been identified, we will be going there to go and take responsibility. In terms of our relationship with the ambassadors, here is a person who is very passionate about it. She is working closely with our ambassadors. Of recent, we just appointed Zuzbini as one of our ambassadors, so she will explain to you how we've dealt with that. And on the issues of equity, I think I am going to put my 2 cents on what the DM has said. When I arrived in the institution, I was excited to see for the first time an institution that's got more than 50% women at executive level. It's the first time. I worked here in Parliament. Many organizations report that it was the first time that you see such a beautiful number. It says a lot about how women deals with reputational management and the image of South Africa. So we need to be proud, actually, that women are at the helm of our reputational management and integrity. So, but we take also the issue that we are, the strategic objective of this country is to build an unracial and sex in a democratic society. Therefore, the issues of demographics, like Dr. K has indicated, that because Mr. Andrew Mandela, who was also a former member of parliament, is a member of a board and the president of Disability South Africa, we have started to take that matter very seriously to make sure that we deal with the demographics. So, as the DM said, people will be employed on the basis of their capacity and skills, and we'll try to balance the issues of equity in the institution. In relation to research, I've already responded to you that we request a slot to come and make a presentation. I'm going to leave the rest of the questions to the team to respond to that. I've noted your point, and maybe I should respond, Chair, and I'll respond from a point of a vantage point, because at some point in my life around here, I used to be chairperson of the Public Works Portfolio Committee when we dealt with the Expropriation Act many years ago. There's a perception on the international platform about what is said in the Expropriation Act. This perception is suggesting that, one, as we expropriate as a country, it's not going to be done in a just and fair manner. It actually ignores Section 25 of the Constitution, which is very clear that it must be just, equitable and fair. So, and it also undermines the fact that there is courts of law that will be final arbiters in an event that a person has not found solace in the decision that has been taken. And let's get to the fundamentals of what is expropriation all about. It is in public interest. The first, it says in public interest. And we used to make examples. If, for instance, a state needs to build a road, and that road is going to, it happens to go to pass by your house, your house will be demolished in public interest, because a road is a public good. Therefore, it's going to benefit the majority of people. There is not going to be nonsensical expropriation of commercial land when we speak about investment. We have spoken about investment, and it's a matter I'm very passionate about. I don't want to get into it, because it's a matter that we explained. Actually, the Public Works Committee at that time was the first in Parliament to visit 9 provinces, Chair, to explain the Expropriation Act to farmers, to communities, to everybody. So
this matter is being demonized by those who does not want to see transformation in South Africa. And we cannot shy away from the importance of making sure that all shall benefit from the mineral wealth, the prosperity of South Africa. So the president has not shied about that, that one of the original sins needs to be addressed. So we would emphasize at all times of what the president has said, and he has been very succinct in every speech to continuously explain himself about the position of South Africa on exploration. So we're open for debate. We will explain. We will make sure that policy is understood, because it's a misconception. So, Chair, with those few words, I thank you. Let me allow the team to respond. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Comrade Tandi, for let us not create a dialogue. This was lost. What was your question? Because there are other team members who are still going to answer questions. I don't know when you say your question is not answered, but there are still other members who are still going to. Let me hear you.
Thank you, Chair. What I was asking is, was any research done? I understand the legislation, and I know exactly every issue that you've raised here. I understand that legislation. I've read it myself. My question was, if any research around the issue was done. That was my question. So I don't need a lecture on legislation, Chair.
It was done. I can answer for you, Tandi. It was done because that work is work of the parliament, isn't it? It was done. And for those who think if we don't address this question of land, this country will be fine, I think those are dreaming, because the land question here is a big problem. And it is a problem that must be resolved. And the manner our government is resolving it is the right way. It is not going to just take away land arbitrarily. It is using law, using constitution to do that. And that is, I can't see any other fairest manner that can address this question other than that. DM? Okay, I see the DM's hand is up.
It would be nice that when we respond, committee members, they don't speak, they listen. Please. The chair said, not the chair, she said, actually the chair said, we are requesting that in the next meeting, we call our research person to come and make a comprehensive presentation about, beyond even land, about any other issue which has got the potential to portray the country negative. That means what? It means there is a research which has been done.
Thanks, Jim. Chair, actually, members are going to be shocked that what the honourable member got there, it's actually not true, because the research has shown that ever since the investment conference, we're getting more investment. So the research team will go and give you figures. They will show you graphs about what has happened. And I apologize in advance if I was lecturing the honourable member. I thought I was trying to elaborate so that we deal with the misconceptions of the things.
Standing in terms of answering questions that have been asked.
Chairperson, thank you. I just wanted to touch on the issues that have challenged the stability of the organization, and then by implication also the retention of talented employees. So it has been mentioned already briefly that there were a number of factors that have impacted on the organization. Much of these issues were also playing out in the media. But we are pleased to report that these issues have since stabilized. and we do not have that happening, and you might have noticed as well. In terms of the leadership issues, yes, the matter of the CEO remains to be finalized, as DM has filled in the gap and given the status from the Office of the Minister. But with regards to other leadership positions in the organization, the CFO, the Chief Marketing Officer, all those matters have since drawn to a close. The CFO was suspended in March and was dismissed in December. We are preparing to advertise the post. The CMO was dismissed in February of last year. We have already advertised that post. We are in the process of filling that particular post. There are lots of historical matters also that plagued the organization. Almost all of them have been resolved and put behind us. Disciplinary cases, there was a long list at the beginning of 2019. These have also drawn to a close. The only matter that remains is the CEO. There were also a long list of audit-related matters that affected Brand South Africa, and these have since stabilized. Brand South Africa now has a concerted effort in terms of stabilizing the organization through a culture change program and a number of interventions within that program to improve the culture within the organization. And in that particular program, we are consulting regularly with our board, with our subcommittees of our board, to improve the organizational workplace climate, and which will then result in the retention of our high-performing employees. The one question we had was about the underrepresentativity of colored, Indian, and whites in the organization. And just to put the committee at ease, it was not deliberately a drive in that direction that resulted in those categories being underrepresented. But together with the recruitment program, we are doing our utmost to ensure that we stabilize representativity in all categories within the organization. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I will address several of the questions. Play your part, types of programs that we do. I think members were present when the team came and presented on the PYP program completely. What criteria is used, what pillars are presented in the program, where and how far we reach. First, I'll try and answer briefly. I'm hoping that presentation you all have in your report. The type of programs we do, we have pillars under Prayer Part. So we have education, women and youth empowerment. We have LGBTQ2 rights. We have nation building and social cohesion programs, etc., etc. And when we select Player Part ambassadors, we select them as a mix so that we have a Player Part ambassador who specializes in the education space, and another one specializing in the entrepreneurship space, etc., etc. And these are all over the country, not just in Gauteng. And when we go into the provinces, we use them to drive some of the messages for us. How do we select them? We identify them in the provinces, but we also have a call to action program that says, raise your hand if you are involved in any work in the improvement of your community. So it's a cross-section of people, young and old. And it's not necessarily celebrities only. We want to also attract ordinary citizens who do ordinary things, like the woman in KZN, in rural KZN, who decided to direct traffic a school was across a busy road, and the kids were getting killed on the daily because taxis were not stopping. And this woman decided to get up and start directing traffic. The Department of Transport started to help her. A tire company started to help her. So there's all those stories that we bring up. And in our messaging, we try and encourage citizens to play a part so that it gets a ripple effect and everybody has benefit. So it's not necessarily a celebrity program. Do we have tools that inform our research? Dr. P, when he comes, he will present to you that we subscribe to a whole lot of indices, domestically and internationally. And those will be your WEF Global Competitiveness Index, for example, transparency indices, climatoscope, all sorts of research, which we will take you through in detail because there's many. We also conduct what is called a domestic study, where we track the mood and the temperature of citizens provincially, which is where this outcome came out, that South Africans are not trusting government, and South Africans don't even trust each other
we go as far as that. And then stakeholders, the stakeholder unit is divided into three units. It's stakeholders that are from the public sector, our partners in government, and then we have stakeholders in business. Within business, it will be the banking sector, it will be the advertising industry, it will be manufacturing industry, etc., etc. And we partner with those. For example, at West Davos this year, we partnered with MTN, because MTN is one of those brands that consistently wins as the top 50 brands of South Africa. We also partnered with APSA, who were stationed at West Davos as well. So there's a whole lot of stakeholders within the business. And then in civil society, we have academia, we have women empowerment groups or women activists, we have youth groups, both domestic and international, and we have civil society also includes faith-based organizations. So that's how we structure them. And we reach out to all of them in all the provinces as well. The xenophobic issue is a little bit challenging because when the media reports on it, they don't classify.
Because I'm looking at the time, I apologize. And DPSA still has to, because I know sometimes the problem, and I advocate that I've been in this committee for years, but some of the questions that they were asked previously, unfortunately. But the point I'm driving at, can we have a rule that says that because of time, questions would be asked and written responses, detailed ones, because as you detailed it in a meeting, then it ends up becoming a workshop, not to you directly, but probably I should have raised it earlier on. I apologize, Chair.
No, don't apologize. This is what I was talking to Mwepe about, that maybe we you read my mind correctly. I was going to make that intervention in the interest of time, because we must end this meeting at 1. Yes. DPME take us to key issues in the now 22 minutes past 12. Okay, apology accepted. DM, if you have an overview and an introduction to the presentation, you can give that.
It's just to update the committee that our DG has left for AXA, Mbumimpofu. Yes, she's with AXA. We've got Mr. Stanley Ndakumba, who's the acting DG for now. So DPME, we don't have a DG. He's acting for now. Ms. Mbumi from the first night. The 1st of February, she was not with us. The last day was on the 21st, the 10th of January. So he's the acting DG for now, until we advertise and all of that. He's with the team. He's going to make the presentation.
Thanks, Honorable Deputy Minister, and thanks, Honorable Chair. Like the other presentation, we'll be focusing on performance of the department for the second quarter, which ended in September, and the third quarter that ended in December last year. Our mission is to facilitate, influence, and support effective planning, monitoring, and evaluation of government programs aimed at improving service delivery outcomes and impact in society. That in the long run, we are looking forward to achieving impact. That is, that the NDP is our main focus, that it should be delivered by 2030. Our core function are in the areas of planning, monitoring and evaluation, and related interventions that cut across those three major functions. On planning, we are seeking to institutionalize planning, and there are two distinct dimensions in this regard. The first aspect is long-term planning, where it's about charting the country's development trajectory, anticipating, analyzing, and responding to emerging trends. This aspect is anchored in the National Planning Commission, and Dr. Matuteng is here as the Deputy Secretary of Planning in the National Planning Commission. She will talk more on the aspects that relate to that work. The second aspect to planning is coordination of planning system, responsible for coherence, alignment, and quality of plans, as well as follow through from planning to implementation. So the government-wide planning part of systems is run by the department, which is a branch we call Planning Coordination Services. On monitoring, we monitor the implementation of the NDP, and we develop robust monitoring and systems that are backed with evidence, which range from what we call the monitoring of the program of action of government, arising from the State of the Nation Address and the Media Tech Strategy Framework, as well as frontline monitoring and performance of institutions at all levels. On evaluation, we evaluate critical government programs with the intention to inform planning, monitoring, and intervention, as well as budget prioritization linked to the NDP. The interventions aspect is responding to cabinet directives and directives from the president, especially through interministerial committees, to solve emerging problems of strategic nature. The example is interventions in places like in Northwest. We have the SASA intervention, and so on and so forth. Now, coming to actual performance, in quarter two, we achieved 73 of the targets and missed 27. That is, 9 targets were missed out of 23. In quarter three, we missed 3 targets out of 24, which gives us 88% performance. And the reason is there is quite a lot of dependencies that I will quickly highlight, although I won't necessarily read word for word in the rest of the slides. So that's the general performance as I have just outlined. So the first program is the standard program in government, which is administration, where the ministry, that is minister, deputy minister and their teams, as well as the director general and functions of administration under the CFO, ICT and corporate services, all of those functions sit there, communication and strategic planning as well. So performance in this specific branch such that in the second quarter we missed 2 targets and achieved out of 11. And the third quarter we missed 1 target out of 10. So that's 90% performance. So the list of those targets are the quite standard one. The approval of the strategic and annual performance plan was done. Quarterly implementation report against the annual performance plan. And then on auditing, the audited annual report and improvement of the audit plan, quarterly reporting on internal audit annual plan, as well as percentage of designated employees submitting financial disclosures. All of those are 100% achieved. Risk, anti-corruption, and integrity management implementation plan, and quarterly report against those risk, anti-corruption, and integrity plans, and then annual communication plan and percentage achievement of targets in that plan. You will see quite a dramatic increase in the achievement in regards to the communication plan. This is not a function of poor planning, but it's a result that the department didn't have a deputy minister. Now we do have one who is very much active in terms of communication, so hence you will see 108% achievement when we are only about 75% into the year. On HR, this is the major target that we don't achieve, we have not achieved in this branch, which is around the percentage of funded posts. We are sitting at 11.5% against the benchmark or a target that should be 10% in the public service. The reason is such that 10 posts were filled during the quarter, one post was filled through internal promotion, and 19 staff members exited the service, which negatively impacted on the vacancy rate. We have a recruitment in, plan in place. Our minister, Minister Mtembu, has made it a priority that we actually fill those vacant posts that are in the structure. So that process has started already. Still on HR, standard processes like the HR planning, as well as even on the ICT, the annual plan, and the targets therein are all achieved. Percentage of a valid invoice, we are achieving 100% paid within 30 days, and we actually try to make sure that that target is achieved much quicker than the stipulated 30 days. That's why we are able then to follow through. For example, we achieve mostly below 15 days, and then those who are standing, then you are able to achieve in 25 days or so. And where there are issues, then consequence management is enforced immediately. At this stage, Chair, I would kindly request my colleague, Dr. Masikin, to talk on the work of the Planning Commission. Then I'll come back and finish off on the presentation. Thank you.
Just be mindful of the time constraint because this meeting must end at 1.
Thank you, Chair. I will just briefly go through the work of the National Planning Commission. The current commission that we have started in 2015 and its term ends this year in September. And the work that they have done is to ensure that there is a program that is able to provide management and support services to the commission. That is the work that we do as the secretariat. There is about 32 experts that are in that environment. We had three targets in quarter two and we achieved two. We missed one, and the one that was missed was just a consolidated report in terms of the research that has been consolidated, but I'll give the reason to that. And we had three targets in the third quarter. We achieved all of them. The quarter two unachieved target was that we were expected to have consolidated a report on the research. But because we consolidated the work that went into the NDP review as a process, we also then just took all the research and put it into quarter three. So that's why we didn't have the list of the research that was done in quarter two. The major products that we have had in terms of the number of NPC plenaries, we achieved to have the plenaries that we were supposed to have. This is just to give an aspect of the research that has already been put into place. We have a paper on energy that gives the aspects of the advice to the country in terms of the energy choices. We submitted a voluntary report on SDGs to the UN in July. We submitted a report that was put into Agenda 2063 that was produced in November. We have a report that talks to the movement of the young people between getting out of school into getting into employment. And then we have the information that has also looked into the analysis of the sustainability of the livelihood of the people. This is just to give the reports that are currently in place in terms of the research that the NDP and the NPC has done. And then because the other responsibility of the NPC is to ensure that there is rallying the country behind the NPC, we also have their role as the convening power to try and have discourse and discussions around the implementation. In quarter two and quarter three, those are the elements and areas that have been in discourse and discussions. I won't go through all of them. And I think the work that we have done so far will be culminated in the two products that will come by the end of their term in September. They will have a report that gives what has happened, and they will also have the NDP review that will go to cabinet and advise the country in terms of what have been the implementation challenges, if there is anything that needs to be done better, what it is that. And then the last report that they will submit before the new commission come into place will be a handover report. That handover report will have all the stakeholder engagements that we have had, the information that arose out of all of those, all the research that has been done over the past 5 years, and what gets to be advised into the coming commission. Thank you very much. If there is any information required, I am sure the NPC can also be invited as an independent advisory body of government to come and give their full review of the work they do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Masuten. On the branch that focuses on planning systems of government, because of the management of the transition, missed all its targets in the second quarter, but on the third quarter they managed to catch up. There was one target which they achieved. So those dependencies also affected the planning, the sector monitoring branch, which monitors the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework, where they only achieved 75% of their targets because they couldn't necessarily report as it was planned. But of course, they did produce a closed-out performance report for the previous implementation period of 2014 to 2019. The public sector monitoring branch focuses on three and four areas. One is the area of capacity development. The second one is frontline monitoring, and then support to the institutions, including monitoring the performance of HODs. 100% of the targets were achieved. Some of the targets are annual. We are hoping to have an annual outlook review of national and provincial departments, how they perform, integrating data from all sources and the assessments that we're already doing. So the MPET, Management Performance Assessment Tool, is no longer going to be done by us. DPSA has established an Office of Compliance and Standards, so they will do compliance monitoring. We will focus on matters of broad performance and results. The second report is actually an annual one, integrated report on state entities, more than 800 of those. So again, we'll be using a lot of secondary data, and of course highlighting the more strategic ones, which is the actual entities, which are about 19 of those. HOD performance, we do submit the report to Parliament, and the strategy to establish the Office of Head of Public Administration is in progress, and we are hoping that in terms of the MTSF we should be able to submit the reports to Cabinet by end of this financial year. 30-day payment of suppliers, that work is under, is being continued, but it was an intervention by DPME to turn around the situation. Now the work will be done by the National Treasury going forward. On citizen-based monitoring, work is ongoing within the context of the new district development model. Those are the highlights. I won't go through them, except to emphasize that our principals are leading from the front in terms of engaging stakeholders and conducting frontline monitoring, including the work that they will do with other sister agencies like BrandSA and GPIM. So, for example, our minister visited the Kanyini Secondary School as part of Go Back to School in Bizo. as well as our deputy minister recently was in Port Mocha in Nelson Mandela Bay. In that regard, he engaged quite a lot of stakeholders in the context of Operation Pakisa, Ocean's Economy, business community. There were four deputy ministers in that space, even the representation from the province itself and the metro, as you can see. So it's, again, that work is now reinforcing the district development model, the imperative to engage the stakeholders. That's the broadly the highlight on France on the payment of suppliers within 30 days, and the detail we are always happy to come present whenever I request it to present the detail. Similarly, on frontline monitoring, we are on track to do those engagements that I've just highlighted. We are meeting our targets, and we are actually observing on the front line some persistent challenges of non-implementation of recommendations by those bodies that we visit. Let's say it's a police station or a clinic or a driver testing license place. The one big problem is poor intergovernmental relations. So we see a great opportunity that the president has presented through this district model, that it will improve the intergovernmental relations by forcing all of us to focus on space and use the district as a space to actually clarify what we are doing to actually meet the needs and deliver on the NDP at that level. The second one is issues of inadequate planning and budget allocation. Again, the call now from the SONA is that there should be that one budget and one plan at that level, which incorporates all stakeholders from within government and from social partners. Third one, non-communication of findings to existing structures. Officials don't escalate issues that are raised. We engage, for example, at a technical level, the management of a facility like a school, and don't escalate that information to their district or even the provincial head office so that matters can be resolved. But we are in the process of trying to find solutions to all of those. That's the rest of the detail. On evaluation, evidence, and knowledge system, this is an enabling branch that provides collection of performance information, evaluations, and research to support monitoring and evaluation of the NDP implementation. Even there, all targets were met and listed, including building capacity on research and evaluation. We are actually establishing now a new center, data center, which will help the president's request or directive that he wants to have a single view of what's happening on the ground. So work is underway to collect information from StatsSA, directly from the district themselves. COPTA has done profiles, and all of that information is being collected into a center or a war room where we will be able to do analytics and be able to support the development of the one plans for each of the districts. Then the critical area of HR, which the committee has requested us to provide more details before, as indicated, we are missing the benchmark of 10% vacancy rate by a percentage and a half. And work is underway to make sure that we are filling those vacancies. That's the detail in terms of levels. We are having 435 posts in our establishment, of which 54 posts are not filled. And now that our Director General is no longer there, it does mean there is a vacancy, and the Deputy Minister has already promised that filling of that post will also be done. That's just a breakdown in terms of processes, from recruitment to actual filling of the post, and of course, if the post can't be filled through the standard processes, then they start acting on it. In terms of the equity, we are doing reasonably well. At an aggregate level, we are having 41.5% of males, and female is 58.5%. And that, to us, is actually a good balance. Similarly, on disability, we are at 2.1% against 2% target, and that's the breakdown in terms of detail again. Similarly on race as well. On finances, there are no issues as far as we are concerned. Spending is progressing well, also in terms of compensation, goods and services, capital assets and transfers. Except to highlight the point that what then we are projecting is going to be just about 90% expenditure by end of the year is affected by expenditure on a building. We are having major delays in getting the acquisition of a new building for DPME because our staff, at least about 40%, are sitting in a very, very bad state in a building in the Johannes Ramakwasa Street, which is just not acceptable at all. So processes are underway. Minister has just intervened with Minister Public Works to make sure that process is resolved. Otherwise, from our side, we are happy to come present on the details of each of these areas. For example, MTSF is now officially out after the State of the Nation address, and it's a very detailed one that covers both the NDP implementation plan as well as monitoring plan. Similarly, on a whole range of research work that's being done and the impacts that we are making on the ground. Thank you, Honorable Members. And the Deputy Minister said there is a team that has come, also the reality of the transition in the department. I had to invite all the heads of the units in the administration side just to make sure that we can be able to provide factual answers without postponing that we bring them another time. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Members, I think in the interest of time, you'll ask questions, but the answers will be sent to you in writing in the interest of time. Can I see who wants to, Lusoma, Kibi, Musipe, Malazi, go in that order?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm not going to say I'm not intimidated by anyone. Chair, I'm talking to my neighbor next to me. On a serious note, probably, Chair, as we engage with DPME, I would suggest that, one, they should also come back within our interaction with them to say how far have we gone as DPME in closing the gap between more departments going appearing before SCOPA and our role as DPME and our oversight. Because we have prioritized departments, but in terms of DPME, because it monitors and evaluates across the board, they must tell us. So that we do have a sense of comfort. It comes 2021, then there will lesser departments going to SCOPA. That's one. Two, Chair, I would suggest that we administratively, through your good office, that let the departments that report to this portfolio committee get our tracking tool, which get updated timelessly, so that they also talk to that, because there are turnaround times that departments would have made commitments on those issues. I'm suggesting that in after 6 months from now, which started last year when the district model was launched, that DPME come and report to us the spin-off of the district model, as it were, the positive ones and the challenges. Four, which is my last one, that I hope that the DM also will also in writing respond, when do we then expect to be the replacement of the DG, because there must be turnaround as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you so much for the department, DPME, for the presentation. Chair, I would want, when we get responses, department should also look at the recommendation that was made that the district development model be incorporated in the development framework bill. And we would want to know when is it going to be finalized, and also what does the district development model envisage to achieve as compared to the existing one. My second one, NDP 5-year implementation plan was not achieved by departments. Now my question is, what led to that? There must be challenges that were hindering the achievement, definitely, and also what are those challenges or weaknesses that led to the non-achievement. The third one, on National Special Development Plan, Department of Rural Development and Agriculture, we're going to transfer SPLUMA functions to DPME. Was that achieved? I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the questions were asked by my colleague, and then I've got only one that says, did internal audit certified quarter two and quarter three performance of the department? Thank you.
Okay.
As I have said, you will provide answers,
Chair,
not now.
Chair, no, oversight. I was on the list of...
Oh.
Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. The question I have is basically on the assessment of the pilot study that has been done with the district delivery model, particularly linking that to the avenues of intergovernmental relations in the current framework. So if at the next presentation when you provide the answers, because one of the weaknesses that the acting DG has highlighted is that the model of intergovernmental relations doesn't seem to be effective in this regard. So I want to establish, because we've had two phases now of the district delivery model which was launched and then the secondary one. And secondly is the issue of the delayed payment of invoices. I mean, there are provinces that are still, despite the improvement in some other provinces, if you look at the stats from the Northern Cape, if you look at the stats, I think it's also from KZN and Gauteng, in some of those instances, the increase is far more substantial compared to previous quarters. So obviously there's been attempts that have been made, but you've got three cases, in fact, the Eastern Cape, yes, the Northern Cape, and another province, so that we have specifics about specific provinces. And lastly, Chair, I think it contains to a housekeeping issue. I think what we need to do going forward, particularly with our core departments and entities that are coming here, is to have sufficient time, because this process of presentations and then questions are submitted in writing, it doesn't provide sufficient platform for robust engagements with the content that is being presented to us. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Tomekulu, we note that, Honorable Malatsi, but unfortunately all the time, I don't know, all the time we meet here, it coincides with the sitting. Maybe we need to look at that. We need to look at that. Let me give Tomekulu first the question.
Chair, I'm sorry, in fact, my hand was not up, but really, because I'm propped up by the question and concern raised by the board member behind me regarding SPLUMA. I understand that maybe the department maybe give an explanation at the time, when time comes, that SPLUMA actually was meant for the Department of COCTA, if I'm not mistaken, because it deals with the land issues under municipalities. Now that there's been that move from rural development to DPMA, now the question comes to me: how possible it is that that can be now dealt with by this department, when actually it should, in my own understanding, maybe split it into the Department Public Works. Yeah, that's my main question. But I'm not sure whether it's well taken, but this is coming to my mind, children that I need to raise.
Honourable members, as I said, the answers will be provided in writing to us through the Office of the Secretary. Thank you very much, those who presented and everybody else. If I have rubbed you off, members, on the wrong side, I will apologize. The chair has to be firm at times, must not be flexible all the way. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.